Dr. Mittman, Mr. Wallace is having some challenges with his internet as well this morning, so he is going to try and call in. We do, if you want to wait a couple more minutes, but we do have quorum at this moment.
Well, why don't we get started and I can read the part that I have to read. We can take the roll and then hopefully Mr. Wallace will be with us.
Great.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it is 10:01. On Wednesday, April 20th, 2022, and the Arizona State Board for Private Postsecondary Education is hereby called to order. The meeting is being held digitally. Meeting agenda and list of applications being considered can be found online at epse.az.gov or in the lobby of the board's office building in the binder adjacent to the case displaying meeting notifications. The board reserves the right to change the order of items on the agenda, except for those matters set for a specific time. The formal hearings and formal interviews are scheduled to be heard during specific time blocks. The board chairperson, that is me, however, reserves the right to call cases in random order. The board, upon majority of a quorum of the members, may hold an executive session on any of the listed agenda items to obtain legal advice. Arizona Revised Statute 38-431.03A3. The board, upon a majority of a quorum of the members, may hold an executive session pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A2 on any agenda item listed. For the purpose of discussion or consideration of records exempt by law, hold on a second, from public inspection, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is specifically required to be maintained as confidential by state or federal law. Americans with Disabilities Act, persons with a disability may request a reasonable accommodation such as sign language interpreter or a copy of this document in an alternative format by contacting Kevin LaMountain at 602-542-5716 or the TDD number at 1-800-367-8939. Mr. LaMountain, please call the roll.
Dr. Mittman.
Present.
Mr. Romano.
Present.
Dr. Leck. Present. Dr. Leck.
Present.
Okay, I hear you, Dr. Leck. Mr. Wallace. Mr. Wallace, if you are on, you're on mute. I can't hear you, Mr. Wallace. Mr. Wallace is not on at this point in time. Mr. Ball.
Present.
Mr. Ball is present, and Ms. Cardullo.
Present.
Ms. Cardullo is present. I'm Kevin LaMountain. I'm the executive director. Keith Blanchard.
I am present.
Ms. Terry Stanfill.
Present.
Jacqueline Rome.
Present.
And Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan.
Present.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. Are there any conflicts of interest based on today's agenda?
Can you hear me yet?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we do.
You can hear me? So Scott Wallace is here.
All right, thank you.
Perfect. Thank you, Scott. Mr. Wallace.
Dr. Mittman, I do have one conflict that I will recuse myself on, which is associated with the renewal application for the Universal Technical Institute and Motorcycle Mechanics Institute, item number 4.
Great. Duly noted. Thank you, Mr. Romano. Can I get a motion to accept the audio recordings as the official open minutes of the board meeting from February 24th, 2022? I'll make that motion if I get a second.
Michael Romano, second.
Great. Mr. LaMountain, roll. Call the vote.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck. Dr. Leck, we can't hear you. If you could turn up your...
Aye.
Oh, I got it now. Thank you. Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of 6 ayes, no nays, that motion passes.
Great. Dr. Leck, you sound like you're living in Whoville.
You're on my phone.
Okay. Know. You still sound like you're from Whoville, which is sweet. It's a nice memory.
You'll enjoy that instead of having to hear me talk a lot then, because I won't be talking so much.
Okay. I always enjoy hearing you talk. Okay. Next up on the agenda is review, discussion, and possible action.
If I could, for one moment, I'm sorry. There is one change to the agenda, and what we will do is, if the board's in agreement, that we will move the call to the public up to the time prior, just before the executive director report. So it will be after the review discussion regarding Aspen, and then just before we move into the executive director report.
All right. I guess I have to. Since I have the discretion, I get to make that call. So thanks for, we will move the call to the public to proceed the review and discussion of the executive director's report. All right, next up, review, discussion, and possible action on newly received information regarding the University of Arizona Global Campus related to operational issues. Representing the institution is Paul Pastorek. President. Mr. or Dr. Pastorek, would you like to make an opening statement? I know that there's a lot of information that's come through in the last few weeks, and so feel free to update us, please.
Sure. Thank you for the introduction, and I appreciate that. I'm happy to be here today to give you an update. I know that a number of agencies that we work with were very interested in the Zovio delay of its quarterly report, which would ordinarily have been done by March 31st. And concern was expressed about the financial wherewithal of Zovio and what impact it may have on us, if any. We've been in consultation with your organization and others to discuss this. We learned from Zovio. We keep pretty close contact with Zovio about these issues so that we're informed. We were aware that they were going to extend the time to file their report to April 15th, which my understanding, based on counsel advice, that they're able to do. It's a grace period that is granted to them if they file the appropriate forms, which they did. They did have a report on April 15th. They did file a formal note with the SEC, as they're supposed to do, which contained their financial status as of April 15th. I think we were pleased. I think others have been pleased to see that they've gotten a clean opinion from their auditor that there is no going concern issue, which means they're able to pay the bills that they have within the upcoming 1 year period. Every company, including our organization, when it issues any financial statements, must declare whether or not they have trouble. And the good news for all of us, I think, is that there is not an issue there. We have been apprised of details of their financials, and those have been made public, again, as a result of SEC reporting. I think the important thing that I would like to communicate about Zovio is they are not the recipient of any funds for students. The University of Arizona Global Campus is the recipient of all funds for students, whether it's student funds, whether it's federal funds, Title IV, VA, no matter what, we are the recipient. The University of Arizona Global Campus is the recipient of funds. Zovio is a contractor for the University of Arizona Global Campus. Were there to be problems with Zovio, we would be prepared to hire a different contractor if necessary. Clearly, that's not necessary as a result of the report that it filed on Friday. But I want to underscore the difference in our relationship and some other enterprises out there. We are a separate, independent, not-for-profit university, which has an affiliation with the University of Arizona. And we manage the affairs of our university. We are in control of those affairs. We're in control of our finances. We have, over the past year and a half of our existence, looked out at other contractors so that we would be prepared in the event that there was anything that we didn't like about Zovio. Forget about the financial issues if we were not satisfied with their performance. And we have opportunities, if necessary, to reach out to other enterprises. We've done a great deal of study on that because we ultimately care about what is the product that we're delivering to our students and want to make sure that we're able to give them the best product that we possibly can. So we have believe that Zovio is in appropriate financial condition right now. It doesn't jeopardize our operations. And moreover, we have relationships with other OPMs out there that were it necessary, we would switch to them. I would also say that we've received inquiry from our accrediting agency, WASC, the Western Accreditation Agency. We've been in discussions with them. We've provided information to them. I think it's fair to say that they were satisfied with the information that was received on Friday. And I would also add that we had a site visit with WASC in December. I think I mentioned it when we had the opportunity to get together in January. We received a number of commendations in a formal letter from WASC about the work that we're doing. We think we're making good progress, and I think it was acknowledged by WASC that we're making good progress on all of our academic areas, and particularly the retention issue, which they had noted 2 years ago. I would also say that it was reported that, and it's a fact, that VA had discontinued funding because of a decision which is actually in our control at the outset. And I wanted to just mention that there appeared to be some confusion between the switchover from California to Arizona in our VA benefits, which caused there to be an interruption. We had followed the directive of the Arizona VA to relinquish our charter in California because we have now established a charter with you here in Arizona. And based on the relinquishment of that application, the California VA acted and unfortunately did not coordinate with other agencies. The Arizona VA and the federal VA. We have been working with the Arizona SAA. We have provided all of the information that they've requested. We have conducted a site visit with them earlier this week. We think that all of those measures are looking favorable, and we're hopeful for a rapid decision by the VA itself. So all in all, I am pleased to say that I think we're in good shape. We continue to track with our efforts to integrate with the University of Arizona. Teams have been formed and specific plans are being made. You'll recall that when I was here last, we talked in detail about that. But that's going forward as we expected, and we're proud to be associated with the University of Arizona, and we're proud to have their support and their backing.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Tommy Screen, who is affiliated and a legal counsel for University of Arizona Global Campus, raised his hand.
Okay, yeah. I was wondering who you were. Thanks.
Yeah, sorry, Dr. Mittman. One point I wanted to clarify, and Paul had mentioned that we are not for profit. That is our IRS determination. The Department of Education has not granted that status yet, and I just wanted to make that one point clear. They're under consideration of that, et cetera, but it's an IRS determination at this point. So,
okay. That's right. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you. Well, first of all, thank you so much for delineating the roles of the university versus the OPM, Zovio, and the financial responsibility, which I think, you know, as far as this board is concerned, it does make a difference. Thank you for sharing your due diligence with respect to other possible replacements should the need arise. With respect to the recent filing, I know that Zovio received a $31 million loan. Was that prior to the filing, or was that subsequent to the filing?
No, it was prior to the filing. The loan was applied for weeks before, and cash has been received in-house, and that was reported in the financial information.
So that had a material effect, positive effect on its financial position.
In my interpretation, yes, sir, it did.
Okay. And where did things stand? I know that you had a temporary, you took some temporary measures to assure that veterans are able to enroll during the interim between approval here in Arizona. Could you just share a little bit more about that?
Sure thing. We did not want students to be interrupted, particularly the VA students, to be interrupted in any of their classes, any of their courses, and their work. So we have offered grants from our own resources to students to assure that there was no disruption in their courses and classes. And I'm pleased to say that the student population has remained pretty stable during this two-week hiatus that we're in. And we've requested that the VA ultimately date the approval of the application to the time it was originally filed. We originally filed for the application December 1 of 2021. And we expect that that's typically the case. But nonetheless, we are financially at risk, and we have taken the steps to assure that students would not be disrupted because of this unfortunate bureaucratic snafu, if you will.
Okay, and that would, if or when the VA benefits are approved for the global campus, that would cover some of the expenses, like living expenses or other things that veterans would otherwise apply for, which I do not believe are part of the package that the university can provide right now. Is that correct?
That is correct. Thank you for making that clear. I should have made that clear.
Okay.
Yes, the military housing allowances are paid in arrears. So for the month that we're in now, the students would be paid for their military housing allowance for the subsequent month. It would not be. And but with the typical process, and we do not cover, we cannot cover for the housing allowances. We can only cover for the tuition and fees. But this is why you typically request approval, which is effective from the date of the original application. We would expect that that would happen, and no students would see an eruption there either.
Right. And then my last question, I'll open up to the rest of the board. You know, you mentioned the move to, or at least the VA and recognized the move to Arizona, and that required the application here in Arizona, and resulted in the discontinuation in California. So my question is are you going to be moving from WASC to HLC, which, you know, obviously accredits the University of Arizona and other schools here in Arizona?
Sure, that's a great question. The Department of Education now allows WASC to accredit outside of the state of California, including Arizona. So presently we're there with WASC. There is a discussion that is taking place between the University of Arizona and University of Arizona Global Campus about precisely whether we will stay with WASC or whether we will go to HLC. It's ultimately the University of Arizona's decision. And I think, you know, what I can say for sure is I think there's ultimately a design that we would be in the same accreditation agency as the University of Arizona. But the actual details of how that will work and when that will work have yet to be decided by the University of Arizona.
Okay. And I guess I do have one other question. You know, you'd mentioned the, you know, that you have the discretion to move to another OPM should either the need arise or just, you know, that's a decision that the university makes. I believe that Zovio does provide some services for enrolled students. I'm not sure, like retention services or some of the things that go along with that, maybe advising. Would you be able to make that switch if you needed to without adversely affecting the students who are currently enrolled in the global campus?
No, that's a very good question. Actually, it's our intent to bring those kinds of services into UAGC in the near term. So we're actively working to make that happen. So the simple answer to your question is yes. There are some technology platforms which they use, which we're actually looking at outsourcing to a third party. And there are also some opportunities for us to take on greater responsibility. There are a couple of areas where we've been in discussion where the University of Arizona Global Campus would take on greater responsibilities.
Okay, great. Thank you. Mr. LaMountain?
Sure, Dr. Mittman, thank you. I just want to make a point of clarification to the board regarding the VA and the state SAA, so that they are two different components. So the state SAA reviews and has conducted a review, a site visit to the University of Arizona Global earlier this week. The funding that is the issue is actually from the federal side at the VA. So SAA and the VA work in conjunction with each other in terms of approval processes. But I just want to make it clear that there's two distinct issues. The VA federal is where those funds come from, where the housing funds come from, and that is somewhat separate from the state SAA. So I just wanted to make that point of clarification.
Great, thank you. Great. Questions from other board members? That you, Dr. Leck? No, I'm just kidding. Mr. Romano, sorry, I couldn't resist.
Yes, in regards to talking through the time frame of how long it would take to actually transfer over to another educational system provider, have you scoped that out at all? And what does that runway look like for you?
Yes, we have, and it differs with different alternative providers, but I think that the opportunity to make that transition would be less than 90 days if that's what was necessary.
Thank you.
Hey, anyone else on the board? Okay. So I will follow the staff recommendation since UAGC is coming up for license renewal in June, I believe on June 30th, 2020.
That's correct.
And it's going to require approval at that time. And so I will recommend that we continue to monitor the situation. I'm not sure if a stipulated agreement, I think, you know, we usually enter into a stipulated agreement to protect either students from a refund standpoint or to protect the strike fund. And so I'm saying this and looking at Mr. LeMountain here. And I'm assuming that since all of the funds flow through University of Arizona and UAGC, that that they would be responsible for any kind of financial fallout, should there be any. As far as, you know, something like a surety bond or something like that.
Yes, Dr. Mittman, members of the board, that's accurate. They are currently not under a stipulated agreement. They are under, they do have a bond, a current bond with us. So if we were, when we get to the next board meeting, which would be the board meeting in May, that we would look at renewing UAGC's license, then we may look at the progress that the institution has made, the financial wherewithal of both the institution and the connections with the Zovio, and then we can determine if a higher bond would be required. As a reminder, the Title IV dollars, based upon University of Arizona Global Campus signing a TPPPA agreement at the beginning of the year with the University of Arizona, that the University of Arizona Tucson is actually responsible under their agreement for all Title IV for the University of Arizona Global. So it would be the risk that would be associated with any cash that's outside of the Title IV under Strife. So I will do some review of that. Certainly by the time we get to the renewal process, I'll have better numbers and then make some determination if an increased bond needs to happen.
Okay. Thank you. So does this need to be a motion, or am I just going to recommend that we just monitor the situations?
This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. No, it does not have to be a motion if you're not going to take any action today.
Okay. We just wanted to make sure you were here. That's why I asked that question.
I'm here just listening intently.
Okay. All right. Well, great. Well, thank you very much. And, I wish you the best of the next few months and continue to grow the university.
Thank you, sir. And we'll keep Mr. LeMountain informed of any matters, change of circumstances. We want to make sure we stay ahead of the regulators and make sure that you're informed as soon as we learn something. So appreciate your taking the time with us.
Great. And do you guys bear down also, or is it just the other part of the university?
We do bear down. We do bear down.
And we go bear down. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Next up, Aspen University. We're going to review, we will discuss, and we will possibly act regarding Aspen University, specifically the loss of SARA eligibility and accreditation update, including any newly received information. And we have a whole group of people here. And so whoever would like to get started, except before you do, we have a message from our executive director.
Dr. Mittman, members of the board, thank you. Just a brief note, in your board folder, there are some documents that are considered confidential, and I've notated those. So I just want to make that clear that those documents are for your review. You may ask questions out of them, but in terms of specific details about anything related to specific students or anything of that nature, that is obviously off the table. So I just wanted to provide that information. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. All right.
Who wants to get started?
Hey, Dr. Weiss. Nice to see you.
How are you today? Thank you very much for having us. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
My name is Joanne Weiss. As you know, I'm the provost of Aspen. With me today is Dr. Sherry St. Arnold, who is our president. I know that Kevin has listed a number of people. I believe that Jay Vaughn might be on the line with us today. I'm here today because I want to provide an update in several areas that Mr. LaMountain mentioned the board would like to know more about regarding Aspen. Those things are the consent agreement with the Arizona Board of Nursing, information about current pre-professional nursing students and affiliation agreements, our status with DEAC, SARA and state authorizations, and of course, a procurement of the bond. Regarding a point that was such a big part of our discussions the last time we were here, we are pleased to report that on March 31st, Aspen and the Arizona Board of Nursing signed a mutually acceptable consent agreement related to the nursing core component of the pre-licensure program. While we agreed to disagree on most points, Aspen only acknowledged that our 2021 NCLEX first-time pass rate was below agency standard. One of the conditions of the consent agreement is that to start the nursing core cohorts again, we must meet an 80% NCLEX first-time pass rate for four consecutive quarters after quarter one, and we expect to satisfy that requirement. For the first quarter of 2022, Aspen's first-time NCLEX pass rate was 73.33%, which can be seen on the Arizona Board of Nursing's website. Aspen appreciates the agreement as it will enable us to move forward with certainty regarding expectations and benchmarks. Regarding its pre-professional nursing students, since January 28th, which was the day of the Arizona Board of Nursing's board meeting that discussed the action that was the subject of the consent agreement, and as of April 13th, 138 students have opted to withdraw from the program. Six who were to have started the nursing core with the February 22 cohort that was abruptly canceled, and 132 from the remaining pre-professional nursing component of the program. Currently in Arizona, there are 297 active students progressing in pre-professional nursing courses. To assist pre-professional nursing students who've opted to leave the program and still wish to pursue a nursing career, Aspen has signed affiliation agreements with Chamberlain University College of Nursing, Arizona College of Nursing, and Northern Arizona University. We are grateful for their collegiality on behalf of our students. For these three institutions, almost all of Aspen's general education credits are transferable. We continue to work closely to transferring students to facilitate the continuation of their studies. Although we are not capturing the number of students who actually transfer to another school. Regarding SARA participation, Aspen began the process of moving its home state from Colorado to Arizona and intends to be on the agenda for the Arizona Council's September meeting. Unfortunately, in the meantime, Colorado SARA state portal entry issued a notice of loss of eligibility for SARA for new students. Aspen appealed that decision. And importantly, as a result, Aspen remains a participant in SARA while that appeal is pending. Regardless of the appeal outcome, Aspen will be able to continue to operate under its SARA approval for currently enrolled students until each student has completed their coursework, withdrawn, or ceased enrollment for a period of up to 6 months from the date of removal until September 22nd. As previously mentioned, Aspen expects to be on the agenda for the September Arizona meeting to formally transfer the home state for SARA purposes. Until then, Aspen is actively pursuing individual state authorizations in each state in which authorization would be required to enroll new students. Because Aspen has a sister institution in California, the only non-SARA state participant, it is quite familiar with the state authorization processes in individual states. Our strategy to remain compliant for all states where we have students is to apply for and receive those authorizations. As a reminder, state approval is not required in all states if the activities do not subject the institution to jurisdiction. And Aspen already has state approval for certain programs in certain states. To date, in addition to Arizona and Colorado, Aspen holds approvals, exemptions, or is confirmed exempt from local requirements in Alaska, California, Connecticut, Florida, Hawaii, Idaho, Illinois, Missouri, Nebraska, New Jersey, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, and Vermont. The BSN pre-licensure program is separately authorized in Texas, Florida, Georgia, and Tennessee, along with Arizona. Prior to the reinstating of our provisional status by the Colorado SARA state portal entry, enrollment had been halted for those states where authorization had not yet been received and was only approved once the authorization became active. Depending on the results of the appeal, Aspen will halt enrollments again and only enroll in states where we have individual state authorization. In response to a request by DEAC, our institutional accreditor, we submitted on April 15 information related to our SARA status and to DEAC standards, reflecting the Arizona Board of Nursing's notice of charges, which was mitigated by the consent agreement. We have been in regular contact with DEAC regarding state regulatory developments, and Aspen's accreditation status with DEAC remains unchanged. Regarding the stipulated agreement with this board, Aspen is scheduled to post an $18.3 million surety bond in a couple of days. Aspen recognizes that the stipulated agreement also calls for the cessation of enrollment for both the pre-professional nursing and nursing core components of the program here in Arizona. Because the Arizona Board of Nursing's consent agreement only relates to the nursing core component of the program, and the stipulated agreement additionally addresses the pre-professional nursing component, Aspen may seek a revision to the stipulated agreement in the future. That concludes Aspen's update, and I'm certainly open to any questions from the board at this time.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Weiss, for a very comprehensive update. You covered a lot of ground. With respect to DEAC, when do you expect to hear back from the accrediting agency in terms of how, you know, how they received your response?
We have only understood at this time, Dr. Mittman, that it is under review, and we've not been given a time limit on when to expect a response.
Okay. And then just for clarification, with respect to students who are currently enrolled pending the appeal with Colorado SARA, am I correct in understanding that all of the students who are currently enrolled at Aspen University, regardless of where they are, either in a one of the states where you hold a license or a state that doesn't require licensure, those students can continue their studies up through the September SARA, AZ SARA meeting?
Right? The timing
after the appeal, even let's say you lose the appeal with Colorado, those students are still able to remain enrolled and continue their studies. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Other board members, questions?
This is Dr. Leck. I have a question about the pipeline of nursing students that cannot attend the program for the time frame that admissions is shut down. Have you provided a list of institutions that those students can apply to and working with the AZPPSC staff to have discussions with them about what their options are?
We have not done that with AZPPSC staff, Dr. Leck. What we have done is our academic advising team has reached out to each individual student, talked to them one-on-one, provided them the options that they have, given them the information about the options regarding the three institutions that have signed agreements with us. But we have not worked that out with Mr. LaMountain. If he, if Mr. LaMountain would like to have that list, I'm happy to provide it, certainly. And then AZPPSC can pass along that information as it is, as they get questioned on it.
Okay, Mr. Romano?
Why don't I let Mr. LaMountain go? He's probably going to speak to that last point.
Yeah. Thank you much. Thank you very much, Mr. Romano, members of the board. Dr. Weiss, yes, I would certainly appreciate a list and a conversation with the institution about what types of support services that we can provide, information that we can provide on our website, and the connections that we have with the other institutions that you've mentioned. So if perhaps sometime over the next week or so we can have that conversation, I'd like to expedite that. Thank you.
Absolutely. No problem at all. You know how to find me.
Okay, Mr. You had commented about the NCLEX results for the quarter, and I know when we last met, they were leading in a more positive outcome direction. I believe even the interim measurement suggested over 80%, and so I was just curious if you could provide a little more color on why maybe the downturn, if that truly did occur. I'm not sure if it did. And then the confidence level of being able to achieve the next four quarters over 80%.
Thank you for the question. In the fourth quarter of 2021, and this, of course, is public information. It's on the Arizona Board's website. You can go in and look at everybody's scores. In the fourth quarter of 2021, our score was quite low, and we were very disappointed to see that, obviously. The annual rate ended up at 58%. In quarter one, we are at 73%. That's a significant jump. So our confidence level for the next four quarters is fairly high that we're going to meet that 80%. There are component parts of the consent agreement that require us, as I said, to have four quarters before we can do a new cohort to move forward in the nursing core component of the program. But our confidence level is high. And the reason it's high is because of the resources that have been put into the program over the last 9 months. I believe I've had that conversation with you already. We've integrated the Kaplan Review Program pretty significantly into the program, and we believe seeing the results of that in quarter one. And we expect that in quarter two, we'll hit the 80%, which would be, of course, the first of the four quarters that are necessary. And then they're actually four consecutive quarters. So we are, our confidence level is high. What we see happening in the cohorts that have graduated over the last, 2 or 3 months, we're just very pleased with that.
Thank you for that.
Can I ask a follow-up question to that?
Yes, you may.
If your scores are where they are still in the 70s, you would have to have a large enough population that is still outstanding and needing testing. How many students do you have in the pipeline that would be testing this year, and have you done any projections on if all of them pass, whether you would get to that 80% or not, or whether, you know what I mean, and that's probably not even reasonable, but you know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. We have probably another, I want to take a guess, at about another 70 or 80 students who could potentially influence the quarter two score. And then over the course of this year, I believe there are about 150 students who could influence the annual rate, in addition to those that are going to influence Q2. Have we done any projections? Very difficult to do projections. In your own university, you know that nursing is, you know, you do everything that you can in order to bring the students to a place where they pass on that first-time pass rate, so that your first-time pass rate is as high as it is. That's what we're doing, everything we possibly can.
And then if your scores don't get above 80%, I'm assuming that it was the waiting to be able to secondarily admit students into nursing, would it continue to be put off for 2 years until you guys get to the passing score, or what would happen if you don't get it this year?
The terms of the consent agreement are available to you. Our intent is that we are going to hit our 80% for the next four quarters, which will allow us to enroll in the nursing corps again sometime next year.
Other questions from the board?
Dr. Mivin, this is Susan Cardullo. I had a follow-on question
I apologize, Susan.
Oh, that's okay. I will lower my hand. Follow-on question to Dr. Lux. Just looking at the math here, it says that in the first quarter you had 70 first-time test takers, correct? And if I'm not mistaken, they look at first-time pass rates. So you actually could probably predict, because you only get to count each person one time, unless I'm mistaken. I also see that you have tracked people who repeat the exam, but your first-time pass rate for first quarter was 70%. Is that correct?
73, I believe.
With 70, okay. So to what you're suggesting is you're just going to make sure that you are above 80% for the following quarters, but your overall average, it's mathematically going to be hard to get an average over 80%.
We are absolutely doing our very best to get where we need to be and to satisfy the terms of the consent agreement.
That was the only thing I was just going to clarify, because it might not be for lack of effort. It might be mathematically nearly impossible. You know, I'm not sure. Those are the numbers. If you get to Mr. O'Mount, that might help. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Kevin.
No, I apologize. After you're done, Ms. Cardullo.
That was pretty much my question of clarification, and I thought you might have some additional insight.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify the report that you have in your board report that I provided you is for the first quarter plus it was through April 4th. So the document that you have in there has a few days into the next quarter, which is why that 70%, and that's from the NCLATS board. So that may have changed a bit. I don't know either way between the date that I put the information in there, but that is quarter one plus some days in April. That's what that number is. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you for that clarification. I appreciate that. One of the things that we've been cautioned about from the Board of Nursing is to ensure that the rates that we seek 2 are the rates that are currently public, and those are the rates that are posted on the website. So if Mr. LaMountain has provided information that goes beyond those public rates, then I really can't address those at this time in deference to and respect for the Arizona Board of Nursing.
I would imagine as we come up on the review, which again is in that June timeframe, the question will be how long does the school feel they can go missing that number by quarter before some other action needs to take place? Obviously, your drive is to start getting it moving forward, while at the same time, if that's not achieved, trying to get clarity. You don't have to answer that right now, but I would imagine that will certainly be a discussion point in the May timeframe.
Yeah, and we will certainly take that up with the Arizona Board of Nursing as it becomes a need to do so. The terms of the consent agreement are quite clear, and you've all been presented with that consent agreement, so you know what those terms are. Aspen is looking forward to a long relationship with the Arizona Board of Nursing, also with Arizona Private Post-Secondary.
Thank you. You're any other questions? Okay. Well, at our last meeting, resulted in the stipulation agreement that Dr. Weiss referenced before. And at the time, the consent agreement with the Board of Nursing was still in process. And so I'm really glad that is taken care of. And so my recommendation is for our staff to continue to monitor the issue, and then we will come back for a full board review for the license renewal in June. All right. And I forgot, I don't think we need a motion for that. Although I'd love to see Assistant Attorney General Monahan, but just to confirm, we're good to just go ahead and monitor.
Yeah, Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan here. I am still here, and no, you do not need a motion.
Great. Thank you very much. All right. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Weiss, and best wishes.
Thank you very much.
All right. And we're going to make the aforementioned change to the agenda by a call to the public. Come on down. If you're on, please raise your hand. That's the easiest way because I can't see everyone here.
And Dr. Mittman, if those that are on the phone, if anyone on the phone, you need to unmute and then just speak your name and we'll call you.
Okay, Nicole. On deck. Nicole, why don't you get started? You'll need to unmute.
Of course. Well, thank you so much. It's so good to see everybody again. Normally, these aren't happy occasions, but we've always been very pleased and appreciated all of your support and suggestions for our school. We are back again before you. As you know, we've had quite an action-packed couple of years. In July of 2020, the school lost its lease, we'll say, with the Frank Lloyd Wright Foundation and had to relocate.
Hold on one sec, Nicole. Do you want to... So I know that the School of Architecture is on the agenda. Mm-hmm. Are you speaking on behalf of the school as part of the renewal process, or are you making a comment, outside of that? So you're not representing the school.
No, I am here, and President Chris Last is here as well.
Yeah. Okay, on behalf of the School of Architecture.
Yes.
Okay, well, here, and I thought we were going to have an actual call to the public. So,
I'm sorry.
You don't qualify as a call to the public because you're on the agenda already. All right. So, but I promise you that you are going to be, you're up in like three or four agenda items.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Well, great. And raising his hand is the one, the only, Mr. Jason Pasillo, who is former board chair of Arizona Private Post Secondary. What an illustrious call for the public this is.
Well, you had a call, so I had to respond. I don't have anything to contribute other than well done and thanks for your commitment, as always, and happy to serve for you guys if we can help at all. And like usual, most of the public is probably my team.
Okay.
Enjoying the meeting and being educated. So thanks, and good to see you guys.
Oh, well, thanks. And I assume that when you said thanks for everything that we do, that was like collectively, not me in particular.
Well, you too.
Okay.
I'll see you soon. I'll call you soon.
Okay. Thanks, Jason. Ms. Cardullo.
Hi, everyone. Switching hats for a second, I just wanted to announce that there is an annual conference for all private schools, anyone on this call or within earshot. And it's being held for the first time in person for 3 years, coming up on Friday, May 6th. And so that is part of the Arizona Private School Association. And so I just wanted to make sure everyone knew that. They can go check out the website and see if they can attend with all kinds of advice and network interaction about regulatory things like this, things like political event, current bills passing, and then just best practices. So, I also serve on that board. Wanted to share that information.
Great. Fred Lockhart couldn't have done it any better.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Fred Lockhart is here.
Well, maybe Fred Lockhart can do it better. Do you want to?
He most certainly can.
Ms. Cardullo's announcement.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, thank you. This is Fred Lockhart, Executive Director of the Arizona Private School Association. I won't even attempt to do it as well as Ms. Cardullo, but to echo the sentiments that on May 6th, we are gathering for the first time in 3 years for an incredible conference, and I hope that you all can attend. In the meantime, I'm on my way downtown for the Committee of the Whole to vote on Senate Bill 1065. Hopefully, we'll have some positive results this afternoon. Thank you, sir.
Well, great. Well, drive carefully, and thank you for everything that you do. And just since we talked about the event, where is the event on
May 6th? It will be held at the Cottonwood Conference Center.
Great. All right. Other comments or announcements, greetings, acknowledgments? Gratitude. Okay. All right. Well, thank you. And Fred, why don't you mute yourself? Because we could tell you're making a turn. I know that sound. Every time my daughter calls me when she's driving, I can hear that click, click, click. Okay. Any other input from the public? Okay. Hearing none, we're going to move on. Time for the executive director's report. Mr. Lemaitre.
After that, members of the board, thank you. In your board pack, you'll see the executive director report. I did provide the most recent updated financials for both the operational funds and the student tuition recovery funds. Again, we're still remain under what our approved appropriation is for the state. We're about $19,000 under that, which is good. That's where we want to be. Revenues are a little over our expenditures at this point in time. That will change a bit when we get to next month's meeting, due to when some additional expenses will hit. Although we are receiving more revenue coming in this month due to the July renewal cycle currently being completed now, that are due on May 1st. Under the Student Tuition Recovery Fund, you'll see that our ending fund balance is currently at $383,557, which is below the $500,000 determination for billing cycle for our next cycle. We are preparing statements that will go out in July for the Student Tuition Recovery Fund billing cycle for next year. More of that information will come to you as we get closer to that time frame, and then we move into July. So I did want the schools to understand that for this year, we believe that this, you know, if everything goes as planned and we don't have a tremendous loss to the Student Tuition Recovery Fund, we may be able to stop billing for a year or so based upon that. We do have three or four additional Student Tuition Recovery Fund requests that will come to the board next month from the Interior Design School, and that's roughly a $10,000 worth of a request for that particular school. We will provide that information as we get into our next meeting in May. I've listed certainly the number of schools that we had closures from July 1 through April of this year. No change to that, and we don't anticipate any additional change to that between now and, fingers crossed, until the end of the fiscal year in June 30. The dashboard, you'll see we have 232 current schools licensed. We were up over last year, which is prior year, was 212. We have 10 pending applications, two of them submitted that you'll see today that are before the board today, and then a number that are under review. We have 69 applications that will we're currently working on for the next upcoming report. And then our transcript requests received 801 so far in this year that we've delivered. We've had 1,401 student transcript requests. It's been a busy time for students making those particular requests for our institution. You'll see other information about the types of service requests and change of locations and new program modification information, and then the schools that are currently on HCM. We have no schools that are on HCM2, but I did provide the list of schools that are on HCM1 from the Department of Ed. No additional accreditation action other than the ones that you've already received in your board folder for Aspen University. I did want to provide, and Fred kind of stole the thunder here, with SB 1065, which is the bill that that others put forward this year in terms of a fee increase. And that is going through third read this afternoon. That does require, because it is considered a taxation component, it requires two-thirds majority. We did receive the two-thirds majority out of the Senate, and we are hopeful that we will receive the two-thirds majority out of the House. If that does happen today, which should be somewhere between 1:15 and 1:30 this afternoon, we'll report that if our meeting is still on. I've got a computer over here on the side with the live feed coming from the House of Representatives. So as soon as that pops up, I'll let you know. And if that were to pass with the two-thirds, it would go back to the Senate and then be transmitted to the governor's office for signature. So that has some positive. And outside of that, that is my executive director's report. If there's any questions.
Dr. Mittman, you're on mute.
The record note that it's 11:05 before. That was the first time someone told me I was on mute today. For schools who are on the call, if they're either new to the board or relatively new, you tell us When was the last time that there was a rate increase for private post-secondary institutions?
Dr. Mittman and members of the board, it's been 26 years since we've had an increase in fees for our board. So it is, we are, as we had some conversations with some of the folks in the House and the Senate, it's really hard to continue to run an operation when you're on the same revenue schedule for the last 26 years when expenses and everything else have changed. So I do appreciate it. And I know that there are some members of the that are on here today that took part in our stakeholder groups that we had last year, at the end of last year in October and November, to help draft and put this legislation together. So I do appreciate all those that were supportive of that and provided the input. And then I, again, just as a point of clarification too, once the bill was drafted and the language was agreed upon, I did submit that language to all of the 232 institutions so that they understand what we were looking for. So everyone has seen the language of that legislation.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you again. Are there any other questions for Mr. LaMountain? All right, hearing none, time to move on. We're going to review, we'll discuss, and hopefully we're going to act on some pending license applications. And so first up are renewal applications, and we'll start with Very Best Phlebotomy Training. And we have Ms. Kelly Ellsbury. Ms. Ellsbury, do you want to start with...
Hi, good morning. How are you guys?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. So, okay. Yeah, here we are again. Yeah, it's been an interesting year. A lot of milestones have been hit. A lot of struggles still, but kind of getting there, right? So, I am now having, I don't know what you guys exactly want to know, but thus far I have graduated, let's see, I'm now in the middle of my ninth class. I'm trying to the point where I have more than two students at a time. I'm hoping that kind of gets a little better. The high schools are getting ready to graduate in the latter part of May. I have been doing a number of different pop-ups, career fairs, presentations, things like that at the high school. So I have some really nice email lists. A lot of my students so far have been like STEM and pre-nursing and pre-med. So I'm hoping that some of those students kind of come my way and perhaps I'll actually have some full class sizes. My classes fit 16 max. I'm also in August going to be eligible for what's it called? The one-stop center. So state funding, will actually, be able to kind of, I think you have to have, you have to have classes going on for a year, consistently before, my program can qualify for low-income people to be able to use that as a means of, paying tuition. So that's encouraging as well. So I've also expanded, I don't know if I told you guys this before, but I own a mobile lab business as well, have for 5 years, that I had on an independent contractual basis. Basically, it was just me under my LLC. Well, I have now expanded it. It is officially a clinical laboratory. I have an MPI for it. I just actually got my certificate, CLIA certificate of waiver the other day. I have a Medicare reimbursement part two app pending. And what I'm kind of doing, because I now have an MPI for the school as well. So, I haven't restructured the organization yet. I did talk to Keith and let him and Terry know that I will be planning it probably in the next year. But thus far, the MoLab business is the parent company as an MPI, and then the school fits under an umbrella for it as an MPI as well. So that's going to increase my externship possibilities for the students going forward. Also, it'll present an opportunity with some of my graduates after they've been in the field for at least 6 months to a year or so to be able to contract through the mobile lab. Not pushing that as a means to get students, but that is an option for after they graduate. So if you guys have any questions, just let me know.
Sure. Well, thanks for the update, Ms. Ellsbury. I remember when you came here a year ago, and you had a very exciting business plan. And I'm just wondering, I'm glad that you've graduated some students. I'm not glad, I feel for you that, so far, in year one, you've operated at a loss. And I'm just wondering, what do you feel are the levers that you can pull and the leverage that you can have to become profitable, and how long do you think that will take?
Honestly, I think this move with the mobile lab company and the collab of that with the school is going to take care of that. So the issues I've been finding, first of all, advertising, that's been an issue. And honestly, just a lot, you'd be surprised how many people have signed up for my program only to have some kind of death in the family. It's been crazy. Death in the family, or someone getting sick, or they got sick, or something else happened. I even have a person who was a business owner here who wanted to sponsor some people. And no kidding, her spouse all of a sudden got ill and died in like a month. So she's moving out of Arizona. So it's been a lot going on where just some things that I just would not think would be happening was kind of happening. But I do think that the mobile lab business doing what it's doing and the collaboration is going to take care of that. Because that way, regardless of how many students I may have at a time, I'm still making profit because I'm able to still have money being made from reimbursement of insurances for providing those types of services. And if you guys recall in my catalog, it also will eventually be a model. I don't know if I know I told Keith about this, but it'll eventually be a thing where patients can actually come in and their insurance will cover them being drawn or whatnot, to be seen as well. And we just drop off at, I drop off at the appropriate laboratories or have pickups done there. So that's one thing. And then again, I mean, when I opened doors, it was in August. So it was already after the senior classes had long graduated. Again, I've been working with Upstart Tucson is who put me in touch with a marketing coordinator, because by the time I met you guys last year, I literally had done every single thing alone. I wore every hat. I didn't have any guidance. I didn't have anybody helping me do anything. So I ended up with an SBA mentor. And she's put me in touch with some resources that got me a marketing mentor, things like that. So she developed a marketing plan, and part of that was going out to all of these high schools in Vail, Marana, and Tucson to do these pop-ups and talk to these students. And that's going really well. The students graduate May 26th and 27th respectively, and I'm thinking that my tuition, will increase at that point. At that point, we'll have more students, more enrollment for each class. And I think a combination of that plus the mobile app services. Cause again, for example, Desiree's behavioral, health, they're now a client of mine. They're just waiting for my Medicare reimbursement, and I can literally just go and start and drawing their patients certain days of the week or whatever, my staff. So at that point, they'll be used as an externship program. I'll have my, staff there with my students up under them. Graduates will be able to do that. So all of these different things are going to help. And again, the fact that I get a lot of people who can't afford the program, they just can't. And I don't offer financial aid because it's such a short program. I probably never get paid, so I don't have that to offer at this point. So I think the one-stop center being able to help the low-income people will help also. Also, a part of the marketing plan is trying to find a local, not bank, but a credit union that may be willing to offer like a non-predatory low interest rate loan for the small amount of tuition that, you know, my program charges. So there are a lot of things in the works. I do believe this year I won't be at a loss. I'm already where last year I only had 5 students. I've already had 7 this year, you know, so I'm in the middle. Yeah, I'm teaching a 7th student like right now. So, and also I was offering a discount, a significant discount before, just to kind of get the program out there so that people see, hey, the program really works. It's a 5-star program. You know, I've gotten awesome feedback on it. People are happy with it. They're getting their NHA certification. So, you know, that's happening and the reviews have been great. So I'm no longer offering that discount because, you know, we're out there now. I'm charging full price for that. So that's taking care of a lot of it because that kind of cut the tuition in half before. So I was taking a loss. So those are the things that I'm looking forward to actually improving this year. I think last year was just a year to kind of start everything, and this year is more for expansion. So that's what I'm on now.
Great. Well, thank you very much. Questions from from board members? Ms. Cardullo.
Yes, Dr. Mittman and Ms. Ellsbury, great to meet you, and what an exciting program. It's very cool, you know, to be in healthcare in such a need, and I do think you're going to be a great candidate for the Arizona program, for the WIOA funds. I think that's going to be right up their alley. And it's great. I enjoyed looking at your website. And also, I noticed you were offering academic support. But is it just you? Because you said it says in your catalog that you can get for satisfactory academic progress for SAP, you can tutor them on Saturdays from 8 to 12. I just was thinking if you have a Saturday course you're teaching, might need a second.
I'm sorry. Go on. Let me let you finish your question. I'm sorry.
that was it. You might be double booked.
No, I get what you're saying. It actually ends up working out because if I have a Saturday class coming in, see, I have it where my students are basically lifelong students. So especially if they're just getting into the field, you know, I not only allow but encourage them to come in and do like lab draws and things like that, you know what I mean, when I have other classes going on, because it's more practice for them, especially before they get work elsewhere, right? Because most places want experienced people. You know, the more draws you get, you know, the more you're eligible to be hired someplace, whether you're certified or not. So even the people who are in other classes, and it kind of works out because it actually very much works out because a lot of times I may have 1 or 2 people in each class. So I got like a night class with 2 people. I got a Saturday class that's got 2 people. If somebody's having trouble and they come in on that Saturday, I already have those 2 people kind of coming in anyways because they're coming in to practice and get their sticks. Okay. So believe it or not, it actually molds together and works out. Right. And if you notice, I also have it where they have to
get I get it now.
So I have to know ahead of time.
Right.
Right. So they have to give me notice and stuff. So.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Only other comment I was going to make is on your website, on your homepage, you have a section where it says phlebotomy training in Tucson. It says you can easily get the job of lab assistant if you're looking for the best phlebotomy program. I don't know if you can back that up with statistics, but the FTC now watches for those kind of statements. So you want to just be careful about that.
Okay. And you know what? I'll remove that because that wasn't something that was originally in my website. I had hired an SEO group that I was employing for a while that, you know, I had working for me. And they were the ones who kind of came along and would do these different things to the site, make blogs and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think that's a good idea I made. They're in India. So I don't know if their regulations are a little different. So I'll go through and I'll definitely look at that. Because I remember when I was doing the business plan and everything for you guys, I was told to be very careful with that kind of fluff, if that makes sense. So, yeah, I'll go through there and take care of that.
That's it. Thank you.
Great. Mr. Thank Romano, you look like you're about to say something.
Yeah, thank Dr. Mittman and Ms. Ellsbury. Thank you very much for coming forward. And yes, your memory is good. We did talk about that. when you originally sought licensure. And just as a reminder, and I realize that, you know, you have other people who are doing that website. Ultimately, you are the owner of the content as the official for the school. So you are required to make sure that your website is compliant at all times and representative and not misleading. So I know you're wearing a lot of hats, and that is understandable with small schools, but please recognize that for consumers, they're trying to make the best educated decision they can, where they may not have a full well-rounded scope of how educational institutions work, and that's why we try and be so careful about what schools do put out there and their accountability associated with such. So please do recognize, although you may be using a third party, ultimately you are responsible for the contents of that.
Okay.
Absolutely agree. And I do try to be very careful with that. I'll go through and I'll definitely do the edit. It's like when I have educational consultation with my students, you know, prospective students, they'll ask me. I mean, I've had people flat out ask me, well, what makes you better than other places? And I'll say, well, I'm not necessarily better. I'm just different. You know, some people would prefer a longer program, you know, where they feel like they're getting, you know, a slower pace, you know, it's not thrown at them so fast. It's not an accelerated program like PMI or Brookline. Or some people just want to kind of get to the meat and potatoes and get it done in 3 to 6 weeks. So, you know, even in that case, if I'm being flat out asked the question on why my program is best or better, I let them know, honestly, well, not really. It really depends on the person, what they're looking for. So I'll definitely make sure that I go through and take care of the website today, as a matter of fact, and, you know, make sure that that's in compliance.
What you may consider is that other institutions have also done is incorporate in some level of audit before something goes live so that you can review those materials appropriately. But we don't want to go too far there, but certainly trying to help share some best practices of what other institutions have done to avoid any type of misrepresentation from that standpoint.
Okay, you cut out for me just a little bit. What was that? Are you saying there's a guideline that I can go and find and follow for reference?
Well, certainly you have the rules and regulations that are associated with your licensure that you can review that will give you guidance on those pieces of it. I was merely stating that before you publish or put things live or have a third party put live for you, again, what other schools as a best practice have done is to ensure that that is reviewed at an appropriate level. Again, all in the protection of the consumer, gotcha, as well as you as the school official, to make sure that you don't ultimately run into challenges with misrepresentation and claims by students that bring you in front of the complaint.
Great.
Understood.
Are there any other questions from the board? Any other questions?
Thank you. And thank you for your continued focus on your school. We know you are putting in a lot of effort there. So thank you very much for that.
Good.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Any other questions, board members? Okay. Hearing none, I will make a motion to approve the conditional to regular non-accredited vocational program license application with the stipulation that the $15,000 surety bond is maintained. Can I get a second?
This is Susan Perdulo. I'd like to second the motion.
And Ms. Ellsbury, do you agree to the stipulation of the surety bond?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. LaMountain, let's call the vote.
Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck? Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace? Mr. Wallace? Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo, it's aye. Mr. Wallace. Okay. Mr. Wallace is absent. So by your vote of 5 ayes, 1 absent, that motion passes.
Great. Well, congratulations, Ms. Ellsbury, and best wishes for a successful year and for all the school's success in the future. Okay. Next up.
I appreciate that. Have a wonderful day.
Okay. Mr. LaMountain, move the slide so quickly. I was about to randomly change the order, but I won't. Because Nicole Hollenbeck was so eager to speak earlier, but we'll do Justice College because I like to stick to the agenda. Ms. Cardullo, I'm sorry, you are the lead. I'm going to just turn it over to you.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Mittman. I'm here to introduce Dr. Chinchin, who's the president of Justice College. And Dr. Chinchin, welcome. Would you like to say a few words to introduce your college?
Absolutely. Thank you. And I want to say thank you to the board for having us a part of your meeting, inviting us again this year. Thank you to the chair and to Mr. LaMountain. But let me give a brief update. First, as you just said, my name is Dr. Palmer Chinchin. I'm the president of Justice College. And on the call at the meeting with me today is Donlin Page. Donlin Page is our academic dean, our CAO. He comes to us from Arizona Christian University, where he has been in administration there for over 10 years. Justice College is on the Grove Church campus in Chandler. It's a 36-acre campus. It's a church that I started 20 years ago. We have 11 buildings here. For those who are not familiar with our college and church, we have more than a dozen classrooms. We have a soccer field, a basketball gym, and even a coffee shop. But in the church business, we use the word miracle. So I hope it's okay that I use that today, because we opened the college for the first time in this last fall to on-campus students. And we opened in late August, and it was a miracle year. We had more than 60 students enroll. We had more than 40 students live on our campus. For those board members who remember last year, I told you we're in the middle of purchasing 5 homes on 6 acres. And we spent last summer renovating those, and those have become our student housing. This last fall and this spring semester, we offered 8 courses each semester. We have an excellent faculty that's doing our teaching. In March, we received great news from TRAX, who is our accrediting agency, that they have approved us as applicants for accreditation. They approved all 17 of our IERs. We are currently doing our self-study. If I could read just 2 short lines from a letter. This is a letter from TRAX to the National Christian College Athletic Association on our behalf. This is Dr. Ron Cannon, the Vice President of Institutional Compliance, and he writes, regarding Justice College, I'm pleased to write this letter to verify that Justice College has fulfilled all the application requirements set forth by TRAX and is therefore officially considered an applicant for accreditation. Currently, Justice College is working on its self-study with the goal of appearing before the TRAX Accreditation Commission in October of this year for consideration of candidate pre-accredited status. So this was a big hurdle for us to reach this point. And one of the IERs is IER 11, is in regard to financial stability. And if I could just mention one thing about that. When we first came before this board 2 years ago, I believe it was Dr. Mittman, he made the comment that it's going to be hard to start a college. We just had $600 in the bank, and he's right. And you were kind enough to let us move forward. We submitted our year-end audit to Ms. Stanfill, Terry Stanfill. I gave it to your staff. And our year-end 2021, we had $147,000 in the bank. So our liquidity is there. Our auditor gave us a composite score of 3.0, which proves, I think, excellent financial stability. Finally, this is not in regard to education, but I wanted to, this just close to my heart. This fall and spring, we've been able to start a basketball and soccer program at Justice College. We've been a part of university club leagues in Arizona, And this fall, we're adding women's soccer and basketball and hopefully volleyball. So thank you for letting me present. I'll pass it back to you.
Thank you, Dr. Chinchin. That was a great recap. And it actually leads to a lot of the areas that I thought we would want to focus on around item number 11 from the tracks, which was the financial stability. I was looking at your financial aid enrollment with your management plan. And I was just trying to do the math here because it said you had 65 students right. And they had paid $73,000 in tuition. So that comes out to like around $1,000. Is that because they are still current? This isn't over the course of their four-year degree, right? Because if the four-year degree costs
$30,000, right.
Looks like there's scholarships for every single person for $4,000, and the semester only costs $3,750. So I'm just trying to understand where this additional funding is coming from if they didn't.
Okay, so we most of our scholarships are tuition discounts. I don't have those numbers in front of me, but yes, our semester tuition is $3,750, and the $4,000 would have been for us for the year. So maybe the numbers got transposed. I'm sorry for that, but it was $2,000 a semester in tuition discounts that we had awarded most of our students this first year. And we do, since we're connected, we meet on our church campus, the group. We have a lot of donors from the church. So I don't know the exact number, but about 50% of our revenue is from donations. We're a nonprofit college.
Yeah. So, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that maybe they're getting outside. You've got your three institutional scholarships or your four. You've got your academic, your athlete, your needs-based, and then the president's, which is anyone who doesn't get one of those, so that everyone can get the $4,000 per year.
It's available to everyone, yeah.
Right. But they might also be getting other sources of funding, not even like Title IV, but just maybe private donations from the church. Is that correct?
We were able to subsidize some of them even more than that with donations that came in. We do not yet qualify for Title IV funding yet. Okay. Our students don't.
The only other question I had was about the counseling psychology program. I take it it's one of the newer ones. Is anyone in it yet?
So we were just approved about, I think, 7 or 8 days ago by your staff. We're so excited. We already have 40 students who have been accepted for the fall. We are just in the last 7 days able to promote. We anticipate having 80 to 100 new students this fall. So I see that being well received. We have a number of our students right now. We haven't even had a chance to announce it publicly to our own students, but I think a number of our students may change their majors now.
Yeah, no, that's great. I had a feeling it was new because when I first started researching you guys, I hadn't seen it, and then suddenly it was there. I will make a note for you that on your website, at the bottom of what is the counseling psychology degree with all the credits and the coursework, at the end it says the total credits for the international business and social entrepreneurship, 120 credits. So maybe it was copied over from another page. I just wanted to make sure it's a different program.
We'll make sure to fix that. Yes, I'm sure that was a mistake in creating that page. Sorry.
No, that's great. I would, at this point, just like to see if any of my fellow board members have any questions or comments for you. Dr. Mittman.
Well, thank you. And good memory. But I also remember, Dr. Chinchin, being so impressed with your background and, you know, in the journey to, you know, that led you into this field, global journey that led you into this field. And so, the only thing that I would question is the use of the term miracle, because I think that, that you guys have earned and deserve everything, all of the good fortune, that you've already seen. And, should the school require, the college require a miracle in the future? Then I'm sure, I wish you the very best. And I, you know, I was impressed a year ago and I'm very impressed. So
Well, thank you for the encouragement. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. And it's been a lot of work. So you're right. It's been a lot of work.
So if I have heard it, I don't hear any other comments or questions from the board, then I would like to make a motion, Dr. Mittman, if I may.
You can make the motion if I get to second it.
Okay, you got to be quick to the buzzer, though. So I would like to make a motion that we approve Justice College as a provisional non-accredited degree granting license with the stipulation they maintain their $15,000 surety bond.
And I will second that.
And then should I ask Dr. Chin-Chin, would you be amenable to the $15,000 surety bond?
Absolutely, yes. We will be sure to maintain that, absolutely.
Okay. Mr. LaMountain, take it away.
Dr. Mittman.
Hi.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much, everybody.
Dr. Lex.
Don't leave yet, because we still have to vote. You never know what could happen.
Okay.
So let's go back. Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace? Mr. Wallace? Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. Mr. Wallace, if you are there, can you unmute yourself? Hearing no response, by your vote of five ayes, one absent, that motion passes.
Okay. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, Ms. Cardullo and Dr. Mittman and the whole board. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. We are excited. Thank you.
Right. And now, the long-awaited, highly anticipated architecture. Back.
Yes, we are here. I am here, and our school president, Chris Lash, is here as well. We are so excited to be here again. You guys have been so supportive, and we've always appreciated that and all of your suggestions that you provided to the school as we move forward. We came before you, I believe, in 2020 as well. So we have come a long way.
Hold on one second. You know, I apologize. This is Mr. Ball's lead, and so I usurped his lead by even introducing him. So I don't want to hog all of the fun here. And so I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Ball, and then Nicole, you get to address the board for the third time.
Well, that's quite all right. So Nicole, take it away.
Thank you. Again, we're happy to be here. We have since successfully transitioned our campuses from our former locations to new locations at Arco Santi and Cosanti. Our students are currently residing up at Arco Santi. We graduated a class last year, and we're looking forward to graduating another class this year as well up at Arco Santi. We at our future campus at Santi. We've renovated the classroom space, and we'll continue forward to renovate additional spaces for the school and to host there as well. So we have successfully relocated all of our students in our campus. We have focused on our financial position. We have reduced our costs substantially. During the move, financially, it was the best that could have happened to us. And we had negotiated a 5-year lease with the Cosani Foundation. So that will take us through May of 2023. And they're, asking us to negotiate, potentially extending our lease with them. So we're very pleased with that, our relationship with we're now focused, obviously, on the revenue side. It's been difficult with the pandemic recruitment, especially with international students and having difficulty in traveling. We had a partnership with an organization in China, and we are still working through that. Again, it is rather difficult for students at this time to travel from there. We've focused a lot on our recruitment within other colleges as well. We have an amazing new director of admissions, and she has had a real impact on students. She's actually a former student of ours. So she actually really reaches all of the potential applicants, and she has been an enrolling student for us over the last few months. So that's been an exciting turn for us as we really focus now on growing our enrollment. This year we had initially been forecasting, I'm very conservative in our forecasting. We always plan for the worst and work for the best. So we're actually forecasting to end the year positively in our positive net income. The school just celebrated its 90th year. We are one of the oldest architecture schools in the country. We're the only one founded by Frank Lloyd Wright, and we celebrated our anniversary on April 6th at a fundraiser at Cosanti, in which we raised over $275,000. So we are very pleased with that, and donations continue to come in. So we continue to have the support of our board in moving the school forward as we rebuild our enrollment numbers. We've had quite a hill to climb in the first couple of years. Transitioning the students, transitioning everything, and going through all of that process. And then we had to invest a lot in marketing and publicity to make sure that schools and students knew that we were open. News traveled far and wide that school had closed, but not so much that we were actually open. So, at this point, we have more admissions or the same amount of admissions inquiries that we had before. And we are launching another PR effort soon in an effort to increase that and again continue to grow the enrollment, which is really what we need to do. So we're looking in the year 2023 to be supporting our school entirely on program income. However, we will continue to fundraise to offer scholarships to our students and invest in our program and look for ways that we can grow the school as well.
Okay, I just have a couple questions.
Mm-hmm.
You, of course, the reason you're here today is because you have losses in the two most recent fiscal years, right?
Well, we actually had $500,000 positive net income. The year prior, we had a negative $900,000 net income, but we eliminated $500,000 in rent expense that we had to recognize with the Frank Lloyd Wright Foundation when we moved, as well as $200,000 in payroll and IT expenses to the Frank Lloyd Wright Foundation and around $200,000+ in dining expenses to the foundation. So once we moved from the foundation, we were in a break-even position, and then we did some additional cost restructuring. So last year, we actually had a positive $456,000 net income. Our net assets did decline year over year. That was due to a trust that we had through Kohler in Wisconsin, which is where Frank Lloyd Wright is from, and one of our former campuses was. And they had provided to the foundation and for the purposes of the school a $600,000 trust. But we were only allowed to use $100,000 of that funding, and it was only to be used for remodeling campuses. So it really wasn't for operational purposes other than remodeling and investing in the campuses. So we offset, when we moved from the foundation, we had to turn that $600,000 trust over to them. So we removed that from our financial statements, but our positive net income offset that by $456,000 that we could actually use that was free cash for the school to use.
Do you produce any internal financial statements?
We do.
The most recent one I have here is your May 31, 2021 financials.
I believe I submitted a financial statement, a statement of financial position, and a profit and loss statement through March of 2022.
Okay. Does that show net income?
It shows the profit and loss at that time showed a negative net income of $59,721. But as I stated on April 6th, our celebration, we raised over $275,000. So we do anticipate ending the year in a positive position.
Okay. Well, I guess the bottom line question here is whether or not we should have you submit quarterly financial statements. Mm-hmm. Would that be a problem?
It would not.
Okay. Do any other board members have a question? Okay, hearing none, I'll make a motion that we approve the regular degree granting license for the School of Architecture with the stipulation that the surety bond of $15,000 be maintained and they submit to quarterly reporting. And would you agree to that?
Yes.
Okay. I made the motion. Is there a second? Dr. Mittman seconds it. You have any discussion? Okay,
we have a motion, a second. Roll call, Dr. Mittman.
He's on mute.
Okay, Dr. Mittman, he's waving his hand, yes. So Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo.
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of 6 ayes, no nays, that motion passes.
All right. Well, congratulations and thank you, Nicole, and please share with your entire staff, because I can only imagine the immense amount of work that you guys had to, I mean, if all you were doing was, kind of digging out of, a stressful situation, the separation from the foundation, moving, having a fundraiser, dealing with, all of the, all of the regulatory bodies who needed to know about every move that you guys made. So please convey on behalf of the board, how much you appreciate all the hard work that went into it. And Mr. LeMountain wants to
say. Dr. Mittman, members of the board, I just want to say again, thank you to Nicole, to Chris. I had the opportunity to attend the fundraising event of their 90th celebration, and I got a chance to meet a number of the students that I told them 2 years ago it did not look good, and I wasn't sure that they were going to continue to have a school. And the fact that I got hugs from everybody and got a chance to celebrate with them the 90th anniversary of the school, it was very heartwarming. So I appreciate all the work that went into that, and I appreciate your students very much and all the staff that you guys, I very much appreciate it. So thank you. And I am so glad I was wrong. That's all I want to say at this point. So glad I was wrong.
Thank you so much. And we were so glad that you were able to attend that event. It really meant a lot for us that you could attend and see our school and see our students, not just our current students, but so many alumni that came as well.
Yes, thanks so much.
All right. Thanks. Best wishes, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
UTI and MMI. And we're going to turn this over to Mr. Wallace.
Dr. Mittman, just as awareness, I am recusing myself. So this is Michael Romano.
Duly noted, twice.
Well, thank you. This is Scott Wallace. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay. Do you have whoever's representing the institution, you have some opening comments?
Yeah, this is Troy Anderson. I'll be very brief. And with me, we have Crystal Blue Allen, who's our Director of Compliance Operations. So again, thank you for the opportunity to present today. Some amazing stories from the prior schools presenting. I'll see if I can at least match that. But, you know, as in the past, we've submitted a number of documents for your review and consideration. And after my comments, I'll defer to you to any questions. UTI had a very strong fiscal year, September 30, 2021. We are a 9/30 fiscal year end school. We clearly bounced back strongly from the COVID effects we felt in fiscal 2020 and even in the early parts of fiscal 2021. In the year, our average enrollment grew 9.8% versus fiscal 2020. We started over 13,000 new students for a year-over-year growth of 15.5%. And we ended the year with more students than at any time since the end of fiscal 2015. So we're really proud of the results that we were able to achieve there. Financially, we had revenue of $335 million, representing year-over-year growth of about 11%. And we more than doubled our adjusted EBITDA versus the prior year and had equally strong results on net income. Importantly, this strong financial performance translated to a Department of Education composite score of 2.6, which is our second straight year above 2.0 and nearly achieving the maximum of 3. And from a student outcome perspective, we continued to see much improved results with our blended learning model. We graduated over 7,000 students during the year, and our average in-field employment rate, again, was 80% plus. We carried this momentum into the first quarter of our current fiscal year, fiscal 2022, with average enrollment growth of 16% versus the prior year. New student start growth was 2%. And our revenue growth was 38% on a year-over-year basis, and very, very strong results on adjusted EBITDA and net income, in noting that the prior year quarter still had some COVID-related performance impacts in it. And I'll also note that our Q1 22 results now include 2 months of MIAT College of Technology, which I'll touch on in a moment. We continue to strengthen our balance sheet, while we are also deploying capital towards our growth and diversification strategy. We ended the December quarter with $99.5 million of cash and cash equivalents. Pivoting to some other accomplishments and actions we have underway, here are just a few that are noted in the materials. As I mentioned, we now own the MIAT College of Technology. We completed that acquisition on November 1st, 2021. I think last year at this time, we had just recently signed the agreement to acquire them. So that was closed on November 1st. And since that time, we've made significant strides integrating their two campuses into the UTI operating model, as well as formulating plans to expand their aviation and skilled trade programs across the UTI campus footprint, which was a significant value proposition of that combination. Continued expanding.
Pull over if you can, the next fix it.
Oops.
We can finish this phone call.
I'm sorry.
Oh, you know what?
I'm sorry. Mr. Wallace, you're on mute.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I'm sorry.
I'm almost done. We have continued expanding our highly successful welding programs to more campuses, with two launched in 2021 and one more already launched in 2022, with another on target for a July launch. And we're well underway launching our two new campuses, with Austin, Texas planned to launch next week, and a second campus in Miramar, Florida, on track to launch in July, noting that these two campuses are now fully optimized around our blended learning model, and we have built in excess capacity so that once we have the approvals in place for the MIAT program expansions, we'll be able to place certain of those programs in those two campuses. We've continued to build upon our expansive manufacturer relationships and our military programs. We've recently announced our BMW program, expanding to new locations and transitioning from a manufacturer paid program to a student paid program, which broadens that out to a broader group of students. And we also launched a BMW military program at Fort Bragg in North Carolina. We announced the first steps towards implementing an EV strategy with both core curriculum updates as well as future enhancements to our manufacturer programs utilizing their EV technology. And on the campus front, we completed our right sizing of our Sacramento, California campus late in 2021. The consolidation and right sizing of our Orlando, Florida UTI and MMI campuses in February, and are well underway to completing the consolidation of our MMI Phoenix campus into the Avondale campus location by this summer. And most recently, we opportunistically acquired a 100% ownership of our Lisle, Illinois campus due to our joint venture partner there selling their majority stake. As we look forward, we continue to pursue other growth and diversification opportunities that align with our business strategies while focusing on positive outcomes for our students, along with enhanced offerings for them and driving increased value creation and for our shareholders. That concludes my remarks. Thanks again for the opportunity, and we'll be happy to answer any questions that you all have.
Mr. Wallace? Mr. Wallace, are you still there? Perhaps Dr. Mittman, you could move it forward.
Yeah. I will take things over here. I know the last time, I think when we met at a quarterly finance committee meeting, you talked about some of the return to in-person. And I was just wondering how, you know, is that 100% at this point? Because I know that there were a lot of, it's a make a lot of difference to be able to provide the kind of education that's required for the discipline that the institutes teach. I was just wondering where you're at in your return to in-person training.
Sure. Yeah. What we've done, and we already had certain of our campuses going into COVID that had a portion of the classroom learning online, but that was largely consumed still in our computer labs on our campuses. With the advent of COVID, we created a full online curriculum for the classroom component. Once we were able to reopen our campuses, throughout the summer of 2020, we continued with that, what we call our blended learning model. And that really is for our auto and diesel curriculum is about half of the curriculum. So about half is consumed online and the other half is consumed through hands-on labs on our campuses. Motorcycle and marine is about 70-30, about 70% hands-on, about 30% online. And our other programs, welding and collision and machining are fully hands-on. We've been investing in enhancements in that platform, both in the content, the engagement with students, ensuring compliance with the Department of Education and ACCSC distance education guidelines from a regular and substantive interaction perspective. So we're fully committed to that blended learning model. So we've been operating with students on campus again since summer of 2020. And at this point, we're, 3 hours, 3 to 3.5 hours for, again, the auto diesel program on campus, and the rest is consumed online at the students' convenience throughout the same timeline. It is asynchronous, but during our 3-week course rotation, they need to be consuming the online curriculum concurrent with the lab components, and there's assessments and quizzes and the like that are done throughout to ensure that they're progressing through the curriculum.
Great. Well, thank you. I have a question. It's kind of a curiosity question, and I'm not sure whether you or Ms. Allen would like to answer it, but how are you guys planning for the whole electrification of transportation? I'm always reading about how, you know, how higher education needs to be nimble and adapt. And if I were to think of anything that's going to be like a radical disruption, you know, that's one of them. I'm just
okay, pull over. Yes.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Mr. Wallace, could you please mute?
Well, I touched on it briefly, but we've had some recent announcements around EV curriculum specifically. So we're enhancing our core curriculum. We already have a very tech-heavy curriculum from an electric componentry and battery technology perspective. It includes hybrid technology today. We are now replacing two of our core classes to add even additional EV-focused technology, and that will be rolling out. We currently have it piloted in our California campuses, one of the classes. The other one we're developing with Bosch, who is a major player in the transportation space. So that'll be a second course that we pilot toward the end of this year and roll out throughout our campus footprint. We've also announced both with Ford and Volvo, who are two of our manufacturer partners, and Ford is aside from now BMW, Ford is the most prevalent of our manufacturer programs. It's on almost all of our campuses, and we have now an EV aviator on all of our campuses, a brand new $90,000 vehicle on all of our campuses, and they've enhanced their incremental curriculum as well. And then, so that's, directly in our core curriculum, and we'll continue evolving that, from an auto and diesel perspective as more and more technology comes to fruition, keeping in mind that there are still hundreds of millions of vehicles on the road, internal combustion vehicles on the road. There'll be a need to service those for many years to come as we make this transition. The other interesting dynamic is that the ASE certification, which is the core certification mechanics receive from our program and from other technical programs, really doesn't have an EV requirement in it. So we're balancing being aligned with our industry partners and being aligned with the way the technology is progressing, while also not trying to get too far ahead of the certification. We're also diversifying, which is our growth and diversification strategy. So MIET, the college we acquired, has wind and energy management programs, HVAC, robotics, of course, our welding program. And we continue to look for other opportunities to expand our curriculum so that we can be less dependent on transportation specifically as we see things evolve in the future.
Great. Okay. Mr. Wallace, do you wanna take over? Do you want me to continue with either question?
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I apologize. I've had some trouble with this phone. I've heard the entire conversation, but okay. The muting and unmuting has been challenging. I don't know why. Star 6. Anyway, I apologize. I see that you had a great year for 2021. Congratulations. There's a great improvement over 2020. Even though you had net income, you had a net loss from operations, and so, but that's an improvement. I think you're part of the financial committee monitoring because of those losses, and it's obvious that you've improved your revenues and therefore improved your net income. So that's great. That's great. I've read the summary provided by staff. That's been very helpful of the history of our relationship. We have a stipulated agreement, and I think it's still in force right now. And your income is up, which might imply that your bond requirement might need to be increased. Those are my comments. I don't have any direct questions. I did look at your 10K. I didn't read all 162 pages, but I looked at a lot of it. So things are going in the right direction, and I congratulate you. Do my board members have any other questions?
I don't, but I will say for those who don't know,
Mr. Wallace is a founding member of a CPA firm and is nationally recognized as a forensic CPA. So if he gives major kudos and said that he read your 10K, he probably did read the vast majority of the 150 whatever pages. So congratulations to you guys.
Thank you both for your comments.
Yeah. Do you want to make a motion, Mr. Wallace? And I would just say, I think in to be consistent, I think that we do need to have the bond reflect the Arizona GTR, the gross tuition revenue, because that's how we apply it to almost every school that I've seen here. And so I would, since you brought it up, I would increase the bond.
Okay, I will do that, and I do agree with you. So I make a motion to approve the license renewal for MMI and UTI. Stipulated agreement remains in force and effect, and maintain a surety bond at $6 million, or not maintain, I'm sorry, increase the surety bond to $6,072,941. And so I'm going to ask the institution if they agree to the stipulations.
Crystal, are we good with the stipulations from your perspective?
We are, yes.
Then we agree.
Okay. So, Mr. Lamalu, you want to... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Okay. Oh, yeah. I'll second.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. We have a motion and we have a second. And just to be clear, I think we probably need to take two votes because we are talking about two institutions. Seamus, am I on track with that?
This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. When we drafted the stipulated agreement, is it in the same document or are they separate?
It's in the same document, so they are combined under that stipulated agreement. So the bonds are not separate. The bonds are inclusive of both institutions.
Okay. I think you're fine then just for one motion.
One. Okay, great.
Thanks for asking.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano is abstaining from this vote. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of 5 ayes, 1 abstention, that motion passes.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Best wishes to you guys.
Great. Thank you again for the opportunity and for your support.
Right, next up, top applicant who does business as Elevate. I don't know which is a more interesting name, but I'll leave it to Mr. Romano to figure that out.
All right, good afternoon. Mr. Rodriguez, would you like to introduce yourself and make an opening statement?
Absolutely. Thank you, everyone, so much for allowing us to be here today. This is a long time coming. We're really excited. I'm here, I'm joined with a few members of our executive team. So we'll have on the call, I'm not sure if their videos are up, but we'll have on the call our head of climber success, Devin Williams, our head of alumni success, Robert Holbrook, our head of growth and operations, Francesca Stalmaria, and we'll have our CPA, Umanga Pereira, on the call. So I think we have all of our bases covered, but I leave that up to y'all and your lines of questions. I do have a few remarks to begin. Is it all right if I lead with those?
By all means.
Awesome. Thank you. So a brief few words on, again, who we are, what we stand for, what we're hoping to accomplish here on this call and just in general as our mission. So we take a step back in July of 2021. The Wall Street Journal reported that there were over 700,000 open sales roles in technology sales. Nearly 70% of those roles are reported by the United States Equal Employment Opportunity Commission to go to the already upwardly mobile, well-networked candidates with prior exposure to sales. So the spoken for. Our mission here at Elevate is to make careers in technology sales accessible to underrepresented communities. So through a boot camp styled education, we help develop the skills needed for our students to be job ready in 10 weeks or less. Now, on January 4th of 2021, we incorporated under career and staffing services and focused on executing this mission among the demographic of folks who are already employed workers in tech. We believe this population would be more serious and motivated to complete a 10-week bootcamp. They were already exposed a little bit to the career of tech sales and the role of a sales development representative, which is the role that we educate and train for. But they weren't able to transition into this role because they lacked fundamental skills or an understanding of the role. So throughout 2021, that was the core demographic that we focused on. We learned a lot. We learned the appropriate kind of cohort sizes between cohorts and instructor ratios. We consulted with practitioners in the field, so managers, directors, vice presidents of sales, all with significant years of leading sales teams on our curriculum. And we were able to bring develop a strong success rate. So 80% of our members by cohort that stayed in their cohort would land a role within 10 weeks. So that was 2021 for us, and near the end of 2021, and I'll stop my comment here. Near the end of 2021, we were trying to think of who we are and what we're aiming to accomplish going forward. We had great success with already employed populations who are looking to transition into technology sales, but we believe we can make a much more meaningful impact if we focused on underrepresented communities still, but those that had absolutely no exposure to tech. So we could further develop our curriculum. We can bring that exposure. We can bring the history of the sales development role to these new members at the time, then develop their skill set so they could confidently land the role in tech sales as an SDR, not just as a diverse hire, but as the best hire. So in November, we were contacted by Mr. Keith Blanchard on the possibility of us actually needing approval by this board to operate within the state. And that was really timely for us because that was just at that moment when we were in this inflection point of where do we go from here? So we decided that we were going to discontinue our model as accepting members, especially on that demographic or folks who are already employed, and instead focus on making an impact educating underrepresented communities that were completely unaware of this career trajectory or opportunity in front of them. So that's why we're here today. We're hoping to get this board's blessing and approval to operate as a vocational school for technology sales. Income.
Thank you for that, Mr. Rodriguez. Mr. LaMountain or Mr. Blanchard, would you like to add anything additional from your perspective before we open it up to the board members for some additional questions?
Mr. Romano, members of the board, I would like to mention that Mr. Rodriguez, since initially we responded and he responded back in terms of operating without a license, Mr. Rodriguez and the entire group at Top Applicant Elevate have done a very good job of communicating with our staff, providing the information that we requested in a timely manner. And that's the reason why they're in front of the board as quickly as they are, because typically this was a fairly complex situation that got the school to the point where they can be in front of the board quicker than others. So from a staff perspective, we do appreciate the time and effort. And Mr. Romano, I did add an additional document because Mr. Rodriguez and I were going back and forth last evening and this morning. So there are a few additional documents that are titled new in your folder that were just some projections, financial projections. So those are included in your folder.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Mr. Blanchard, anything from your position? Maybe Keith's having some problems coming off mute or nothing additional. But I did just want to note the fact that it was brought to the staff's attention that the school was operating without the license, and so that'll probably be a discussion point here as we continue to go forward, as well as the board will have to make a determination of what type of action they might like to take from that standpoint of the school operating without a license in the state of Arizona. But before we get to that, just looking at the application in its totality, we appreciate the partnership with the board that you've had and reconciling some of these pieces, putting certain documents together from that standpoint. I know you also, it was identified there were two outstanding student complaints, and I didn't know if you had a particular update on that that you could provide for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So to give everyone some context, we are aware of those two complaints. They were filed at the end of December 2021 and the beginning of January 2022, respectively, among two of our members who at the time were alumni. These two members are very, very bright. They had absorbed the curriculum very quickly in their cohorts, to the extent that they began to apply that curriculum and those learnings directly to their job search ahead of schedule. So they requested if we could support that, and we made a decision internally to do so with one-on-one meetings outside of their cohorts, helping them through their interview process, et cetera. And they had great success. So like I said, they were very, very bright. They landed the role within 5 weeks. And at that time, you know, back earlier last year, they began to share a concern that they did not want to pay the full amount because they landed a role earlier than 10 weeks. So they filed their complaints. The cases near immediately moved to arbitration, and then both of these members approached us to settle. And so we have signed both settles, and all parties are settled, and we move forward.
I appreciate that update. Thank you. And I know you go back and, well, I shouldn't say you go back and forth. You use the term members. And I'm trying to appreciate what that means from a student. I'm assuming you mean students.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, yes, and to clarify, I think there's, in our vision of how we see ourselves, there is a 2021 and then there's a 2022. And so in 2021, when we started, we didn't see ourselves as a school. We saw ourselves as offering career services and building a community, and the folks that we would, the candidates that we would accept would be members in this community. When we were presented with the opportunity and need to be in front of the board, we took this as a, oh, this is the model we really want to move forward with. We do not want to be a membership community. We want to be a school. And so 2022 and anyone that we can, because we've ceased enrollments, but folks that we can enroll, candidates we can enroll going forward, are students to us. So as I speak in the past, I'm speaking about members because that's how we articulated them. But in the future, I speak as students.
Thank you. And I know in your financials as well, you kind of differentiated between revenue from placement and revenue from sales. Can you help me understand that?
Absolutely. So placement is, we, as part of our program, we also have partners who will reach out to us. And this is on our website. There's a certain tab just for employer partners, partners who are really interested and aligned with our mission to bring in underrepresented communities into their teams. And so there's a hiring fee associated, and there is an opportunity for our students, if they want to meet with those employer partners, they can obviously go through the full 10 weeks of the program. In addition, we have optional badges, which are work that's outside of their curriculum that they can complete to achieve those badges and then be ready to receive career services. So those career services would make referrals to those employer partners. So if we, you know, going to those financials, if we look at quarter one, for example, we had $55,000 in revenue come in from employer partners who made payments to us for referring them quality students after that had come through our program or who had been alumni. So folks who had recently graduated and gone through the full 10 weeks. The other revenue is gross tuition. So our tuition, we have two forms of payment. There are payment plans through one called the retail installment agreement or contract, and then we accept loans as well.
Thank you. I'd like to come back to that point, and so we might as well kind of just continue that discussion. So when you started this, I think you were doing ISAs, and move to the retail agreement where it looks like, based on the documents that were added yesterday, that seems to be, I think, over 31 months or something to that effect at a value of $403 to make up the tuition that you associate with it, which is managed by the school as well. Is it your desire to discontinue or at this point no longer offer ISAs to students who would go through the program?
True. We entirely believe and love the income share agreement model. Unfortunately, I think that it is relatively new to the market and there needs to be some more regulation around it. And so we have found, and you know, generally the market as well doesn't love it. So we have opted for discontinuing it going forward. And instead, retail installment contracts is a great alternative. It, again, allows that payment plan for students who cannot be approved for a loan and want to have pay over time still. So we're happy to approve that. And I think our projections reflect, you know, a percentage that would go to those payment plans through the RICs and loans.
And you were the manager, and by that I mean the institution, Elevate, was the manager of the income sharing agreements. Is that correct?
So students, or I'm sorry, members at the time, because we don't continue to offer ISAs, would sign an enrollment agreement with us that says that they are opting for an income share. But we used a third-party vendor, Leaf, at the time, and we've moved over to Meritas that essentially services those agreements. So they have the member, again, 2021, but we can say student going forward, they have the student sign off on multiple disclosures that would allow them to take payments. So we don't touch that at all. We don't touch payments. Once payments are made through the third party vendor, the third party remits them back to us at the end of the month.
And then, and realizing you're moving forward from that piece in the retail agreement side, are you managing that as an institution or do you have a third party that's managing the collection of those payments?
Third party absolutely is managing. So that's Meritas now. They're managing the existing portfolio of 2021 and those payments coming in.
But now moving forward with your new plan.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's also Meritas. So they have partnered with us on framing up our retail installment agreements, and they manage those contracts as well.
Okay. I will say, you know, listen, reviewing the materials, and there was an SBPC document that was shared, which I believe you have seen as well. There was some pretty strong language by you to some students that appeared not to be paying or responding back to a payment plan. In this case, it was the income sharing agreement, but given the fact you're still doing kind of a payment plan approach, there was some pretty strong language and respectfully not very becoming of a school leader and engaging of students. Can you help me appreciate that and how you see engaging moving forward?
Yeah, so we had a member of our executive team who is no longer with us back in July, who had been reviewing through the third-party vendor folks who are making payments and who were not, and took it upon himself to create through our CRM and send over templated emails to, which is why all of those emails look very same, through my name, which is on the account. We had had a conversation thereafter, which led to his ultimate departure from the company. And it's rather a sensitive issue still. And so there was some NDA signed. And that ultimately led to this fiasco, but it also is why he left the company in September of 2021, which was just around, if not a few weeks later, those emails were sent. So it's terrible. It's actually one of our values in 2021 that changed into 2022 was everything for the climber. We call them climbers. And so for us, that means, you know, these people are really taking a huge leap of the faith on themselves, especially if they've had no exposure to this career path in prior. So they may be coming from walks of life where they're working landscaping or construction. And now we're talking about this opportunity in front of them if they'd like to be educated about it, where they'll be a remote worker and they'll be earning a salary of X amount, et cetera. And it's very foreign. And so we don't want to be in these payment collections conversations at all. We want that completely separate. We just want to focus on education and supporting them in their placement, in their career path. But two, that language is just something that we don't want to be a part of. So, you know, when these two members who were part of those folks who had received that email approached us to settle, we were more than happy to do so, because I believe there was probably some emotional damage that came from that. But that is not us. That's certainly not us going forward. That's another reason why we don't want to be a part of these conversations.
I appreciate the comments on that piece of it. Obviously, as you start to engage, you will have a lot more students who come to you who don't have this type of background. And sometimes students can become very captivated by what the opportunities are that seem to be in front of them. And so as we encourage all of our schools to just be open and transparent, we're all about student success, right? And helping the students move forward positively from that standpoint. So I appreciate your comments in regards to that.
Thank you.
A couple other things that I wanted to just mention, and I will say on the, I guess, actual documents that are student-facing, you were consistent with your 40 hours, but there were places where you interchanged 60 hours of education time, and I wasn't sure if you were looking to make a change there or if it really is you're looking to stay at the 40-hour delivery.
Thank you for that. And this is, again, I think, you know, with Mr. LaMountain talks about some of our communication, I really appreciate the team's patience with us because there was a lot of what should we consider as required going forward versus not. So 40 hours speaks to attendance hours when they are actually in front of an instructor. There are some other expected hours, but quote unquote not required. So they do have assignments. Every student has assignment that we calculate or estimate as between 5 to 10 additional hours per week. Students will also be assigned mentors and even sometimes staff internally that they meet with weekly to make sure they're absorbing the curriculum, that, you know, if they didn't have a chance to raise their hand in class and get something missed, that they have something in a private setting, etc. So there are some, and then there's badges, which I think my team is happy to talk about as well, which are, again, optional if a student would like to take on some extra work to show that they're ready for interviewing and they would like to be exposed to an employer part. So all of those, we kind of went back and forth as to like, what should we consider as required? And we settled on required is attendance hours. There are certain things that are expected, such as like assignments that be completed weekly.
Thank you. Before I kind of go into my last stuff here, I want to give the opportunity to my other board members if they have any other questions.
I'm good.
Yes, I thank you so much, Mr. Rodriguez, for this explanation of everything. The only thing I was wondering about is in the executive summary, I noticed something about not right after it's talking about the California lawsuit, then saying that you are not regulated in California, and then the attachment is just a copy of the Post-Secondary Education Act. Is that you saying, are you just saying that you aren't considered a physical presence in California?
True. And we actually have email correspondence with a representative from California as well. We haven't filed for an official exemption because we kind of want to cease communications with other states, et cetera, until we can feel like we have the blessing of this board before moving forward. But yes, I think that was our intent.
And then, so that complaint, does that go through the Department of Consumer Affairs then, that existing one you had?
I am not, in terms of when you say, does that go through the Department of Consumer Affairs, can you clarify what you mean?
When you said you were settling with them?
Yes.
Is it one case with people in two different states, or was it two separate cases?
Two separate cases with individuals, so it's not with the state at all. So when we settle, we're settling with the individual member.
Thank you. That helps.
All right. Hearing no other questions, before we move forward with a particular motion, obviously, Ms. Wilmont, as you've mentioned, some new updated financials in the folder, which could obviously impact the amount of the surety bond. So I wanted to kind of talk through that first and just make sure I'm seeing this clearly and properly from that standpoint. So it looks like the overall estimated revenues are increasing based on the new projections from what you provided. Is that accurate?
I'm sorry, you cut out a little bit on that end. You said I heard overall revenue and then I didn't hear after.
Was increased with your new projections.
Gotcha.
From what was originally provided.
Right, right. I think that there was, so for example, in an original documentation, we didn't include, you know, that in Q4, we're anticipating looking for potentially a location, et cetera. So we had to make a last minute edit. And I think also to call attention to Q1 as well, we have to close out our Q1 books, and Umanga can speak to this, I think. So there may be some finalized edits that come through in the next couple of days for that as well. So apologies, but we feel like we're pretty close here.
Okay. Thank you. And Mr. Lamont, this question is to you. In fairness to the school, obviously, we would like to put a surety bond in place. I don't know if it's been our practice, though, to use a projected revenue number in that first year, or to more use that flat fee of the $15,000. And I just wanted to get guidance of what our practice has been in regards to new applications and setting the surety bond amount.
Sure, Mr. Romano, members of the board. It is board discretion. You know, the traditional typical surety bond is the $15,000. Then you can assume the potential risk based upon the financial analysis that the board has done. If there is a reason to believe that the institution, that the state would be better covered with a higher bond, which was the recommendation in the report that I provided the board. We have, to be honest with you, we have done both. It is both whether we maintain the 15,000 depending upon specifically accredited institutions, degreed institutions, and institutions such as Mr. Rodriguez's, which is a non-accredited vocational program. So the discretion is entirely up to the board.
Thank you for that, Mr. Lamont. I will share Mr. Rodriguez as well. Depending on where we land in regards to the surety bond amount, you do have the ability to come back and request adjustments to that based on new information as well. So recognize that just in kind of the operating side of it, if we make a motion today and that passes for a particular amount greater than that of the 15,000, and based on what your projection is here, depending on how the board feels about that piece of it, that if you are not achieving that, you do have the ability to come back and put that back in front of the board for consideration for an adjustment. So I just share that with you for working knowledge. Mr. Lamont, is that an accurate statement?
Mr. Romano, members of the board, that is correct.
Thank you. Okay. So we have a couple things here that I'm probably going to separate into two different motions based on the school's application first, and then the fact of the school operating without a license in the state of Arizona. And given the fact that the school was operating without a license, it's new, and it is, we see your projections are very strong in regards to what's coming up for the new year, and you've already had a chance to kind of test the waters, if you will, unlicensed. I think it's legitimate to say that we would want to put a surety bond in place greater than that of $15,000. And so I'm going to try and piece this together, so I apologize. I'm a little bit rough here. But the first motion I would like to make is that we approve the conditional non-accredited degree program licensure application with the stipulation of a surety bond in the amount of the new projection, which I would believe would be at $1,300,000. I need to get back to that so I don't mess it up. $1,373,000 or 10% of that piece. Mr. LaMountain, is that correct?
Yes, it would be 10% of that, so it would be $137,350.
Very good. So to make it that 10%, the $137,350 for the surety bond. Does the school agree to that stipulation?
The school agrees.
Okay. All right. I'll move back over to the other screen.
And Vice Chair Romano, were you thinking, this is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan, were you thinking of also potentially leveling a civil penalty?
I was going to do that in a separate motion, but if we need to combine them in both, I'll seek your guidance for that.
Yeah, I think it's easier just to keep it into one motion and see if they would also agree to that stipulation as well.
That's fair. So I would also like to make, include in that motion that we do apply a civil penalty for operating without a license in the state of Arizona for $1,000 as well. So now that we've kind of wrapped that into a little bow, Mr. Rodriguez, you agree to those stipulations?
This is very fair. Thank you all very much. We do agree.
Do I have a second for that motion? I recognize Dr. Mittman as a second. All right, with that, Mr. Lamont, would you take roll?
Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Ms. Cardullo?
Aye.
Ms. Cardullo votes aye. By your vote of 6 ayes, no nays, the motion passes.
Ms. Rodriguez, congratulations. We are excited for you. We understand that you are at a great turning point here with the start of your school and what that looks like. As the chair for the complaints committee, I always try and help new schools from the standpoint of please be very aware of how you advertise to the students, looking to set them up for success and being very clear and concise. You as the owner and operator of the school are solely responsible for that piece. Okay?
Thank you, Mr. Ron.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Mittman, I'll turn it back over to you.
Okay, before, I just want to be mindful of everybody's various needs. Do we need a lunch or bio break? And if we do, do we want to wrap up one more application for licensure or break here? How are you guys feeling?
This is Susan. I'm about ready for a break.
Okay. All right. Then let's break here. Let's take 20 minutes. All right. And we will reconvene at 1:07.
Great.
You mean 12:57?
Yeah, that would put us at 30
minutes. Yeah, 12:57.
How about 1:00? We'll make it easy. 1:00.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.